So you have one class that you're going to talk to everybody in the congregation about. What are you going to talk about? We're going to be talking a little bit about faith this morning, and I want to talk about it in a way, for me, it helps to have examples about a lot of things that we do. Many of us find examples, things to do. Any of you want to try and do something and you go to YouTube to see somebody else has done it? Has anybody done that? Just me? Okay. All right. Some people actually, there are people who put videos out on YouTube that if you want to learn how to change the oil of a 1986 Mazda 323, somebody has a YouTube video on that. All right. So you can go to YouTube and find a video of how am I going to do this? What are some mistakes people have made? What are some things I need to watch out for? And so YouTube has a video for you. So maybe I'm not sponsoring YouTube for many reasons, anyway, we'll get off that. But so we go to the Bible and we have a lot of examples and a lot of different things. And we have people who have slain giants, we have people who have done many marvelous things in the name of the Lord, and we have people who have also have done good things and people who have made mistakes and recovered from them. And it is good that the Bible is very real. Right? The Bible is very real. It does not give us just the polished, these are the greatest things people have ever done, but the Bible gives us the mistakes people have made. The Bible gives us errors that were made, and we can learn from those, but we can also see how people overcome from those errors. And we're going to look at the faith of Peter this morning as sort of something to help us in our everyday kind of struggle or walk in faith. And we've seen Peter, and none of these things we're going to be talking about this morning is anything necessarily new to you, but just kind of take a fresh look at them and look at him from the standpoint, what can I learn in faith from these certain snippets from the life of Peter? We want to start in Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14, you have a lot going on. In the beginning of the chapter, you have John the Baptist was beheaded for his faith. The 5,000 were fed. And beginning of verse 22, it says, Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him on the other side. Other side of what? The lake, Lake Galilee, right? Which isn't that huge. It's like 18 miles north-south, 6 miles east-to-west. Okeechobee is like 30 miles across. What's that? 60, it's like 60 across north, south, east, west. Okay, it's huge, right, compared to this. So it's not anywhere near. So when we say the Sea of Galilee, it is not so celestial as that. But anyway, so they're going across this lake. And we know what happens. Jesus goes up on the mountain to pray. Now, Jesus puts them in a boat and makes them go across. Do you think Jesus knew it was going to happen? I think so, right? I don't think there was any surprise to him of what was going on. But what was happening in verse 24? What was happening in verse 24? Were they just, you know, trolling along lazily? What was happening? That's right. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. I think that's an understatement concerning what... Because these are men who what? Peter... Has he been on the water before, or is he a complete noob to sailing? He's a fisherman, right? He knows water. He knows this lake. And if he's scared, then there's an issue, right? I don't know if some of you have gone in and out of the Jupiter Inlet before in a boat? Okay. I was taking a friend out one time, and with another friend of mine, we were going out in a small little 13-foot, probably didn't have any business being out in this boat, but we were going out in the inlet, and it wasn't that big a deal, and it was a little bit contrary. Like, so the tide was coming in, so big waves anyway. And so we were trolling along, and all of a sudden, we knew, or at least I thought he knew what he was doing, and all of a sudden, this wave comes over the bow of this 13-foot boat, and it was like one of those rogue waves. Have you heard of that? We didn't even see it coming. Just all of a sudden comes over the bow and drenched us head to toe. It was how our morning started. So things happen on the water that aren't expected. And in this case, things happen. The storm comes up, and he was not expecting it. And so they knew the water. They knew what was going on. And it was a fourth watch of the night, and he came to them walking on the sea. So Jesus is coming to them walking on the water. They've been on this sea a lot. They probably have never seen that, right? They have never seen that. What is their response in verse 26? They Scooby-Dooed this, didn't they? Right? It's a ghost. It's a ghost. And they cried out in fear. I mean, that's the only explanation. We don't think somebody, well, Jesus is walking on the water. We don't think that, right? This is something supernatural. This is above natural response. It's not normal to be walking on the water. And immediately Jesus spoke to them, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." Jesus says that to a lot, says that to them a lot. Take courage, don't be afraid, it's me. It's just me. Especially after his death and he's kind of zapping in and out of rooms that are locked. He says that a lot to them. But what does Peter do this different than anybody else? What does Peter do? He's like, "Hey, I want to try that. That looks cool. Let me put my floaties on and I'll come out there with you," right? So do we see that just in Peter's demeanor, what we've read about Peter up to this point? He's sort of the one the first to respond, the first to jump on these kind of things, right? And so we don't doubt that Peter was the one to do this. And so he steps out of the boat. And what happens with him? He starts doing what? Walking on water. He sees Jesus, he's walking on water, and he's going to Jesus. What happens when he takes his eyes off Jesus? You've heard the sermons on this before. What happens? He starts to sink. What does he see around him? The waves, the wind. All of a sudden he realized, oh, wait a second. So have we ever done something that in the moment, this is what I need to do, we feel like this is what needs to happen. We're joyous, we're zealous for this thing to happen. Our faith is on fire, and then all of a sudden we think too much. Have you done that? Have you ever overthought anything? Okay. Did Peter maybe overthink what was going on? Maybe you thought, well, I'll climb up this high ladder and change this light bulb, and then you get to the top of the ladder and you start thinking about, maybe I shouldn't have done this. So we overthink things sometimes, and we take our eyes off what our focus was on, and Peter did that. Now, Jesus, obviously, we know the story. Jesus did what? He's seeing, yeah, so immediately Jesus stretched out his hand, so apparently he wasn't that far, and took hold of him and said, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" What are some lessons we can learn in faith, about faith from this example? Hold on. How many of us who have lived living a life of faith have ever taken our eyes off the focus and gotten shook, gotten kind of got? How's that happen? My grandfather used to talk about every once in a while if things would get, I get rattled and I'd call him up. Do you guys have people you call when things go sideways and you call him up? And he would say, "You got your bucket shook, didn't you? You got your bucket sloshed." How many of you ever sloshed a bucket and stuff goes everywhere carrying a 5-gallon bucket? That's what he said. You got your bucket sloshed a little bit, and so just stay the course. Get things righted, settle down. And when you settle the bucket down, what happens? Calms down, you can keep going again. And so that's kind of what happens here with Peter. I mean, he's doing right things. He's the one that stepped out of the boat. Nobody else stepped out of the boat. And he goes to Jesus, but he took his eyes off what was happening. And of course, it's a lesson that is good for all of us in any moment, that if we take our eyes off what we're supposed to be focused on, we're going to sink. And that's why so much of what we read of the apostles' writing later on is what? About keeping your eyes on the prize. Have this mind, which was and focusing on Christ, the forerunner of our faith. So Peter did have trouble with his faith in Jesus, but we've all been there. He also had some trouble with his perception of Jesus. Look over Matthew chapter 17. Can we think just any old thing we want to about Jesus? Can we think anything we want to Jesus is a great guy, and we can say and teach anything we want to about him. No, we cannot. We can only say what Scripture says about who he is. It's interesting that when Peter preaches in Acts 2, he says, "This Jesus, whom you have crucified." Why be so specific about Jesus? "This Jesus, whom you've crucified." What's that? There are other people named Jesus. Did you know that it was a very popular name? So if this guy is going to come, his name would be Jesus, and you want your child to be this kind of prince, you're going to name him Jesus, right? It's a popular name, but it could be also that they're trying to be very specific about who we're talking about, right? So it's important, our concepts of who Christ is. In Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 through 5, what do we typically call this? What's going on? They went up on the Mount of Transfiguration, right? That's how we call it in Bible terms. And so he goes up 6 days later, and this is not 6 days after the event we just looked at, but 6 days later from the previous event, he took with him Peter, James, and John, and they led them up on the high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, his face shone like the sun, his garments became as white as light. It's just interesting, this situation. This is almost like a burning bush kind of scenario, right? This coming into this presence and being up on this mountaintop. When we have highs in our lives, we call them what kind of experiences? Mountaintop experiences, right? It would be fair to say that for those three that were on this mountaintop, that this was a mountaintop experience. We get to see Jesus like nobody else has seen. And they get to see who else? Moses and Elijah. Which is to say, they have seen the personages of the Old Testament. If you wanted the people that personified the Old Testament, the giver of the law and the kind of the most prominent of the prophets, you got to see Moses and Elijah, all right? It'd be like saying, I got to see George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, for example. I got to see the presidents of presidents. Like it'd be that kind of situation, all right? How did he know who they were? We don't know. But they knew that that's who they were seeing. Unless they introduced themselves or had name tags, they saw Moses and Elijah. Now, if... Some of you are saying, "Hello, my name is." Okay, so if we look at this experience, what did Peter begin to say? What did he want to do? What's that? We wanted to build altars, which is not an inappropriate response to something so, you know, for you, awesome. You've never seen anything like this. What do I do? We're going to build altars to whom? All three. Which, if I build altars to all three of these individuals, what does that mean about all three of these individuals? They are all equal. They are all equal. Have you ever been corrected by somebody? Like, you say something and you think it is the right thing to say. You say it with vigor and you say it with all your conviction, and then somebody corrects you. Has that ever happened? Okay. What do you feel like in that moment? It's a little bit small. What if God corrected you? Would you feel even maybe smaller? Okay, so Peter says this, let's do this thing, right? Let's make these tabernacles or altars to all of them. And then while he was still speaking, the words have not stopped coming out of his mouth. What does God say? This. Again, that word. This is my beloved Son, in whom I'm well pleased. What does he say? Listen to him. What is that? That's a lot in that one sentence, right? That's a lot to unpack in that one sentence. What is God saying in that one sentence? What does he say? What does he affirm about Jesus? Yes, he's elevating Jesus above Moses and Elijah. This is my Son. What do we have to believe? What do we have to come to God in faith believing? That what? Jesus is the Son of God. So this is the supreme truth. This is my beloved Son. What she had said before, right, at his baptism, this is my beloved Son. in whom I am well pleased. He's doing all the things that I have asked him to do. Listen to him. So we're talking about a transitional period, right? We're moving away from Moses and Elijah, moving to Jesus, establishing Jesus as a source of information, right? And so they are in the presence of understanding that. So Peter had to understand what about Jesus? What did Peter need to understand? He has the authority. All authority has been given to me, right? Under heaven and earth. He needed to understand that about who Jesus was. Now, had he said that before? If we go back maybe just one chapter, what happened in chapter 16? Who do men say that I am? Peter said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. He made that statement. But did he completely understand what that meant? The Christ, the Son of the living God. Not quite. According to verse or chapter 17, he didn't quite understand all the ramifications of that. Are there people in your life that you know that believe in Jesus, the Christ? Do they completely, 100% understand everything there is to know about the Christ? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. In their lack of knowledge about who Christ is and the church that he established, then we are, like as you say, running off the cliff in our understanding. And that's happening a lot. People are very sincere. People are very convinced of their beliefs. But is it possible to be sincere and convinced and be wrong? Is that possible? Yes, it is. Was Saul convinced, sincere in what he did? In persecuting the church? Yes, he was. Was he wrong in what he was doing? Did he misunderstand who Christ was? He did. Yes, Jesus.
It's pretty interesting to see Peter get carried away in a mountaintop experience and have a great idea about worship and say, wow, we should totally do this. And God say, that's not what
I'm looking for. That's right. Yeah, that's a very good point. This is another kind of tipping the hat to the idea, the proper idea of worship. Like these were not, all three were not people to be worshipped. There was one that was there that was appropriate to be worshipped. And it's not, we can't just do whatever feels good in the moment and say, and call it worship. Right? It's not, according to this passage, it's not, the example is not, God accepts everything that I do as long as I do it sincerely, as long as I do it with all of my heart, then I can do whatever and call it worship. That's not what we read here. So that's a very good point as well.
Peter thought that was a great idea. Let's build three tabernacles.
Yeah.
I mean, who could go wrong with that?
That's legit. It's a legit idea. You know, there's precedence for that. They did it in the Old Testament, so why can't we do it now? So we need to understand what's going on about that as well. So he had trouble in his perception of Jesus, but we maybe have been there and needed to be corrected about who Jesus was. And maybe there are people who have sincere faith, but maybe not with a complete knowledge of who Christ is, and we need to make sure that we're doing those things to help them as well. Maybe we've been here as well, trouble with our conviction. In Matthew chapter 26, probably one of the things that Peter's most, one of the things that is famous for in his life. Matthew 26, beginning in verse 69. Let's actually start. Put your finger there if you want, or your bookmark, or scroll over to Luke chapter 22 real quickly. We'll start there and then work our way back. Luke 22, beginning in verse 31. Well, so Jesus is saying to Peter, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And you, once you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. But he said to him, Lord, with you I'm ready to go both to prison and to death. And he said, I say to you, Peter, the rooster will not crow today until you've denied me three times that you know me. Are there times in our lives where our faith, we are convicted, there's nothing that can stand in our way? You wake up in the morning, you've eaten your Wheaties, And you're going out and you're taking the day by the horns, right? And your faith, there's nothing that can stand in your way. There's a moment when you can have, we even here, we come together, we sing, we encourage one another, we worship God together, and in here we are so encouraged, our faith is built up. But then something happens, right? What happened in Luke chapter 20, or Matthew 26? Beginning of verse 69, they follow Jesus. Jesus has been arrested. They scatter, but they follow. Peter and one other apostle, or one disciple, follows Jesus right to the house where he is being tried. And they're sitting in the courtyard. Please kind of think of a house that you go in through a main gate. There's a courtyard, and there's rooms off the courtyard. It's kind of what we're looking at. And one of the rooms off the courtyard is where you can overhear the trial, the mock trial that Jesus is undergoing. You can overhear what's going on. And they're sitting around the fire because it's, if you have a fire at night, it's typically because it might be what? A little bit chilly, right? So you have a fire. And they're sitting around a fire. And who begins to talk to Peter? A servant girl. Hours before this event, had pledged your undying loyalty to go to prison and to death. After Jesus had said, Satan has asked permission to sift you like wheat. And you said, never, I'll die with you. And now you're sitting at a fire, and a servant girl says what? Aren't you one of his disciples? Have you ever been in a situation where something seemingly so small, the moment you have to prove what you just said, you back out? What does Peter begin to do? What does he say? How does he respond? I don't know him. I don't know him. I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Yes, sir.
I like the verse that says, but your speech betrays you.
Yes.
Then he starts cussing.
Yes.
Yes,
and we'll get to that in just a moment. But we haven't necessarily maybe been around a fire when this happened, right? But maybe we've been at work and our demeanor or maybe even our actions begins to separate us from everybody else. And you start to stand out. What do we do when we start standing out? What's our natural, as people that are community driven, what is our natural response? To try and blend back in, right? To try and blend back in. It's not always good to stand out. Because sometimes, even for good things, you stand out and you start taking fire for it. Right? We are not, as a body of people, we're not always the best. Somebody starts to stand out and they get the attention, good or bad, of everybody else, right? Usually it's bad. I've told you before, I worked in a motorcycle shop when I was young. It was easy to stand out in working back with a bunch of mechanics, right? Because you thought sailors were bad in the way they talked. And so it's easy to stand out. But you come in, and that temptation to fit in, it may not be a servant girl calling you out, it's just that desire to fit in, not to be different. And in your actions, you don't say the words, I don't know who Christ is, but your actions say, well, I just want to fit in. I don't want to be the guy that stands out. I don't want to be the guy around the fire that's different. And she begins to, verse 70, he denied it. He said, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, it's a common response. I don't know what you're talking about. It's a common response. And when he had gone out to the gateway, another servant girl saw him and said to those who were there, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied it with an oath. I don't know the man. I don't know him. A little later, bystanders came up to and said to Peter, surely you too are one of them, for even the way you talk gives you away. Surely your speech betrays you, the King James says. And that, there's a lot of times in our lives our speech should betray us, right? Our speech should betray who we are. We should be known as being different because of the way we speak or don't speak, and we stand out. But that temptation to slide back in and not be different. Now, what was Peter, to be fair, what was going on around Peter at the time? What were they doing to Jesus? Yes, this was not a friendly discussion, right, that was going on in the room over to, they were beating his master up. Jesus had already told them, you will not be, a servant is not greater than the master. You will be suffering as well, right? You'll be suffering as well. And so now that he's seeing that, now he's in the face of what it actually means to suffer for Christ and stand out, he starts rethinking it. What does he start seeing again? Those waves, right? He starts seeing those waves. And he begins cursing. I mean, it doesn't say this, but if he spat, he spat, right? He's cursing and spitting and say, I don't know the man. I don't know him. I don't know him. And immediately what happens? The cock crows. Luke's account says what? Jesus saw him. I don't know about you, but if you told somebody that you're going to do something, and then in the moment that you didn't do it, right at the pivotal moment, you weren't going to do it, and they looked at you. Do your parents ever look at you in a way that you're like, I'm in trouble? Do you have that look? My dad had this like vein that would stand out in his forehead, which was a big vein because he had a lot of forehead. So I knew that something was amiss when we got that look. Especially if, I don't know, did your parents ever like rap on your head or whatever when you're sitting in the pew? You're sitting in the pew. There were four of us sitting in the pew. My dad must have a really long arm because he could knock on all of our heads when we were doing something we weren't supposed to be doing. But anyway, we're getting off the point. So Jesus looked at Peter. How do you think Jesus looked at Peter? Did he look at him with the vein sticking out of his forehead? Probably not. Maybe I told you so. Probably, I don't think Jesus did I told you so's. But he looked him out in a way that, how did Peter respond in that moment? What did he do? He went away weeping. He looked at him in a way that Peter went away weeping. Peter, who had earlier said, I'll go to prison, I'll die for you, right? I mean, he had professed great things. But in the moment when he was going to stand out, servant girl said, your speech betrays you. I don't know the man. Is there any kind of similitude between our faith and Peter in that moment? Have we been around a fire, going to be standing out, and we deny him by our actions, and our speech betrayed us? It happens. It happens. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 5, Paul writes, and it seems that Peter was the first disciple apostle that Jesus appeared to. We don't have a record of that account. That was something between the two of them, right? I imagine it went a lot like what happened by the sea again, when they're waiting in Jerusalem and Peter says, I'm going fishing, and they go fishing by the sea, and Jesus appeared to them on the seashore, and do you love me? But we don't have an account of that. But it's interesting that in a very similar way that, so Elijah goes off, he does this huge thing, and then goes off into a cave when somebody starts trying to kill him, right? Goes off into a cave, I'm just going to curl up in a corner over here in this cave and die. And God says, what are you doing here? What are you doing, man? What are you doing? And he gives him work to do. He says, go back. There's 7,000 who haven't bowed the knee. You need to anoint this person as the next guy. So when in Luke chapter 22, as we read that, Jesus said, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. But what? But I've prayed for you one. And what? When you return, strengthen your brethren. Gather them back up again, right? Be that shepherd. Gather them back up again. And so he gives them, he says, you will come back, and you have work to do. Yes, sir. Yeah, John beat him. He was younger. Yes, John went to the tomb, right? And like you said, he ran ahead, and Peter following it. And like you said, Peter was the one that went in. I would think no less of Peter, right? Peter probably lifted up the garments and make sure he wasn't... Is he hiding in here somewhere, right? Yeah. Yeah, so that we would expect that of Peter to do that. Even after what had happened, when he comes back, and when we've denied Christ as well, is that the end of the relationship? It's not. There's still work to do. Come back, strengthen your brethren, and get to the work at hand. Is that any different for us? There will be days, and there may be times in our lives when we've done this very thing. But we need to remember that, like Peter, we can come back, and there's work to do. There's work to do. And those two things, coming back, reconciling, and getting to the work at hand, will help us stay on track. It's amazing that when you're working, you're doing, and you forget everything that's going on around you. How many of you have worked, and you just, time has flown by, you didn't even know what was going on? And that's very similar to what we need to do as in our faith, in our walk with Christ. If we get to the work, time goes by very quickly. Hopefully, if it's something we're enjoying, right? So, look over in Galatians chapter 2. A lot's gone on in Peter's life between that fateful night and Galatians chapter 2. We'll be looking at 11 through 14. Chapter 2, Galatians chapter 2, verses 11 through 14. So what's happened between then and now? A few things happened between Matthew 26, Galatians 2. What's happened, guys? What's gone on? Can y'all fill us in? So Jesus did what? He died. Excellent. And then he did what? What happened? He raised from the dead. You guys, this is Bible class. You can talk. And then what happened in Acts chapter 2? This is like right here. Anybody? The church was started. Peter preached. Excellent. Very good. Very good. We'll get some stickers later. All right. So once we got that out of the way, so Peter's preached. And we've moved on. Where the church has been established. People are by the thousands coming to understand who Christ is, being baptized into Christ. Then other people start being baptized. Who are these, like these Johnny come latelys that start being baptized? Not the Jews, but the Gentiles, usins, right? That's us, right? We start, you know, this whole concept of Gentiles being grafted in. And being a part of this thing was difficult for them to understand. It took years. It's been estimated that Acts chapter 10, with the whole blanket coming down, take, kill, and eat, barbecue was started in Acts chapter 10. That moment was 10 years after Acts 2, possibly. So years for them to understand that the Gentiles are in on this gig as well. All right? Even after that, there were still divisions. So what was happening is, like, if If you wanted to narrow it down, the Jewish church was in Jerusalem, and the all-inclusive Gentile church was in Antioch. All right, that's where that kind of got started. And so, but when Cephas came to Antioch, coming down from Jerusalem to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. Paul preaching here. For prior to coming of certain men, so he comes to Antioch and he's worshiping with the brethren in Antioch, as he should, right? As he should. And then certain men from where? From Jerusalem come down and they start doing what to Peter? But when they came, he began to withdraw, hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. So we're not like 12, 15 years into the church being established, and there's already what? Some division of thought. The division of thought are those that still holding to the practice of circumcision, still holding to those old traditions, right? We like our traditions, and they were holding to those things. And so when those men came down, he started to do what? Withdraw himself, be aloof, not take part in. And what do we do to unity when we start doing that? Start driving a wedge in unity when we start having those kind of feelings, those kind of that kind of behavior. And so what did Paul do to him? Yeah, he withstood him. He said he corrected him in that moment. The rest of the Jews joined with him in that hypocrisy. So it wasn't that it was just him. Because they saw Peter doing that, they also started doing that thing. Even Barnabas, which is saying a lot, because what is Barnabas? What do we know Barnabas as? The son of encouragement, right? He would never do something like that. He would never do something that would cause other people to feel different or left out or any way triggered in any way. So it's Barnabas would never do that. You all right? It's okay. Okay. Never mind. So as we look at this text, we see that Peter kind of got off track with what was going on, right? We are called to sow seed, right? We are sowers of seed. If we start to be selective in the sowing of our seed, of the seed, the gospel, what happens? Are we guilty of this as well? If we start to be aloof from anybody in the church and be selective, could we be guilty of this as though there were second-class Christians? Could we be guilty of doing this and causing division? Yes, we could. There are no second-class Christians. And that's what he begins to say, that you can't do this. We are all brothers and sisters by faith in Christ. And Peter kind of lost track of that and trouble with partiality. And in our faith, we can be in the church, and it's possible to do the same thing. Have we ever been judgy about anything? Yes. We have all been guilty of doing that. And so that is something that we need to be careful in our faith as well, in our life of faith, that we're not doing those things as was done there, showing partiality. If we look at the life of Peter, we see his highs and lows, right? Probably his highest high, he's the one that gets to preach on Acts chapter 2, and everybody else obviously does translating and that kind of thing. We see their lives, or see what was done there. Peter lets us know that we can make mistakes. We will make mistakes, but we can still do great things for God. If we ever get to a low point in our faith and say, well, God will never take me back. God will never take me back. I've done this. I've done X, whatever it is. God will never use me again. Is there any moment in Peter's life where he could have said that? God will never use me again. I've done this thing. Yes. More than once, right? More than once. I mean, even in Acts or in Matthew 7:16, when he says, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God," and then Jesus starts talking about how he needs to die and that kind of stuff. And then Peter says, "No, you should never die. You don't need to die." And Jesus said, "What? get thee behind me, Satan, right? He went from here to down here in like the span of 5 minutes, okay? So, yes, we can. But if we ever get to the point where we think, well, I can never come back and be useful in the service of God, then guess who has won? You've been sifted, and guess who has won? The Bible gives us the good, the bad, and the ugly of every of the characters that are in it so that we can understand that we are human. And the life of faith has been lived by humans, not by heroes with supernatural powers that could never fail. They've lived, the life of faith has been lived by humans that have made mistakes, have fallen down, gotten back up again, and still done great things for God. And every once in a while in our walk of faith, we need to be reminded of that. We need to be encouraged and understand that, yes, I will mess up. He's already said you will, but he's made the way for us to come back. Now, should I continue in sin that grace may abound? Heaven forbid, right? God forbid, Romans chapter 6. But we can get up. We can move on. We can go forward. We don't have to be lost in the mire of conscience, of just... of doubt because of where we are. Are there any questions or comments before we close this morning? Yes, and that's a very good point. Job was and it wasn't even that Job was, God kind of lifted up Job and said, have you considered my servant Job? It wasn't even that Satan even asked. He wasn't even on Satan's radar. But it is a situation that, yes, God has prepared us to be victors over anything Satan can throw in our lives. Can throw in our paths. It's just, are we there to step up to the plate in the moment and do it? Thank you very much for your comment. Thank you very much for your time this morning.